Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Maddie Walsh. She's the lead singer and songwriter for the moxie rock band The Blind Spots. Walsh holds a bachelor's degree in English and creative writing from SUNY Binghamton and a master's in the same fields with a concentration in poetry and creative nonfiction from CSU Sacramento, California. She has released a solo folk Americana album and three rock pop albums with The Blind Spots. Maddie and The Blind Spots, by the way, are celebrating their 10th anniversary with the upcoming release of their new CD, Talk, which we'll be discussing today, and welcome.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Now, I want to talk a bit about the fact that you went through two universities, got two degrees, English, creative writing. What was it that called you away from a literary an academic career?
I guess academia was always this very elaborate backup plan for music. I sort of always knew that I was going to be a musician. I come from a family of musicians, not any of whom who took it on as a career, but I was around a lot of music when I was growing up, and it became pretty clear that that was something that I should be doing. So I put a lot of pressure on myself. It didn't come from my parents to go to college. I just said that this is like, get this part of life out of the way and then start doing music full time. Mm. And I had some really great professors in Sacramento who were sort of leading me down the PhD track. And I was ready to go. I was like kind of ready to do that thing. And then I had sort of the freak out moment, and I called my dad and said, I don't think I'm supposed to keep going. I think I have to do music. And it was a resounding, like, go for it.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
So I finished my master's, and then I moved home to New York. And that's when The Blind Spots started to form, almost right after that.
Wow. Well, I want to know how the band came together. Must have been friends prior to it. How did it gel?
Some of us. So I met Mike Suave, who was the co-founder of The Blind Spots, in 2008 when I first moved back from California. And we just had a mutual friend, and she knew that he would be looking for a project. He had a really popular band up in the North Country in the Adirondacks called the South Catherine Street Jug Band. Hmm. And he had moved here with his girlfriend, and they, you know, broke up. And then he was just here kind of looking for musicians to play with. And so we just sort of talked about musical influences and what covers we preferred. And he had songs and I had songs. And so we started to rehearse. And that was at first like an acoustic duet. Mm. And we traveled around a bit. He still had a lot of connections up in the North Country, like Plattsburgh and Saranac Lake, mm-hmm. and Lake Placid. So we did a little bit of touring, and I have family down in Delaware, so we did a couple like weekend type runs. Mm. Pretty quickly decided that we wanted to add players so that we could, you know, out of the coffee houses and onto the big stages.
Oh, that makes sense, especially for what you became, right, The Blind Spots.
Well, what's funny is I totally thought I was a folk singer. I mean, I thought that I was very limited in my abilities. I mean, I've always been singing, but I've mm-hmm. been singing, and especially at that time, I was really interested in much more folk and Americana music. And so I was really hesitant to have a full drum kit and electric guitar uh-huh. and electric bass. But the first time that I started to sing with that gigantic sound behind me, it pushed something else out of me. And Suave, who is now my husband, said, you know, you've got much more power in there. You should use it. And then it became very liberating, too.
That's something that you notice immediately when you hear one of your songs, the power of your voice.
Thank you. I couldn't have done that. I mean, who knows what would have happened if Suave and I hadn't crossed paths when we did. I think I would have headed down a different direction mm-hmm. musically. But what we're doing now, I feel freer and more open to explore all different genres, and I do understand a lot more about my voice than I did back then. And the voice matures like anything else.
Oh, so. Of course. Well, let's talk a little bit about the new CD, Talk, and then I want to play the first excerpt.
Sure.
To tell us how this came together.
So we had been working on it for a couple of years. Our last record, Rhizomatic, came out in 2015. So this was sort of a long time coming. We always have new songs, and there was probably enough material to do another album right after that. But, you know, at this level, it's expensive. You have to, like, play a bunch of shows and save up so that you can record again. And we had been working at Pyramid Sound with our then drummer, Mike Parker, at the helm as the producer. We were touring a lot, and I kept sort of saying to myself, as soon as we get home, we'll take like the 2 or 3 weeks that we're home and we'll just spend all of that. But life happens, and you have to catch up on all these things when
Absolutely.
You haven't been home for a while. So it was tough to get anything done on the recording while we were touring that much. Mm-hmm. And then I got a call from a good friend of mine, Nick Bullock, who used to live in Ithaca. He lives in Nashville now with his wife and two little kids, and They moved there several years ago. He was a musician and producer in Ithaca and founded the School of Rock here in Ithaca, too. Wow. He played with Revision and The Sound Awake, great singer-songwriter, and he moved on to Nashville. And so randomly, as like the record had sort of been on hold while we were doing all this touring, he sent me a message and said, hey, I just wanted to like see how you guys are doing and, you know, just throw it out there. I know that you're at Pyramid Sound, but if you'd ever want to come down to Nashville and record, he has a studio down there. At first, I didn't think it was a possibility, but we talked for like 2 hours and it started to seem like exactly the right fit. He reached out at the right time and we had sort of been talking about the benefits of recording somewhere else besides your hometown, which is basically having no distractions, so that all you're doing every day when you wake up all day long is working on this record rather than working on your house, mowing your mother's lawn or whatever it is people do.
And the expectations from hometown, you know.
Yeah.
So I can understand that and how freeing that
it was.
Yeah.
It was a really, it was like right place at the right time. And pretty much everything about this record happened that way. I feel it was just the right thing for us. Nick reaching out at the time he did completely randomly. And then, you know, we can talk about this after we listen to the song. But a song that ended up being the title track was written in the studio on our second to last day there.
Wow. Well, I do want to play an excerpt from Talk. And then this one's called Ying Yang Boomerang. And I love the atmosphere of this. Tell us just a bit about it.
Yeah, this is a pretty straight-ahead, super fun pop song. I've been thinking a lot about, I guess, since the 2016 election and trying to figure out a way to look at what I consider a total disaster to be something that can also be galvanizing and motivating for people. So I've been thinking about this, like, the light and the dark and how they one can't exist without the other. And
well, let's listen to this excerpt, Ying Yang Boomerang. How do you approach songwriting? Do you just get ideas floating in your head, or do you sit down and deliberately say, I've got to write something?
It depends. So most of our songs are written, co-written by my husband, Mike Suave, and myself, and he plays guitar all the time. So he considers it like I'm just casting out a line constantly. I'm sitting there and I'm just fishing for things, and he's just walking around the house with a guitar in his hand all the time.
Wow.
So he'll find something that he gets excited about, and then he'll sort of play some of the music for me, and oftentimes he'll write several parts, like three different guitar parts, one of which might become a keyboard part, one might become a bass line, and one might become a vocal melody. But usually he'll bring me, you know, a little like iPhone demo, and then I can sit with it for a little bit and work on melody and lyrics. And I, as far as lyrics go, I've been writing forever, and I always have a backlog of stuff that I can pull from. But sometimes if I hear something brand new that he's bringing to the table, that'll excite me and take me a totally different direction.
Oh, that's so fun, isn't it?
It is fun. And it's, you know, it could be really frustrating to write with another person if you have some idea about exactly how it should be. But I think that we've gotten better results working together than either of us separately. And the formula mostly works. But because we are husband and wife, sometimes we're like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm going to the other side of the house and doing this on my own for a little while. Then we'll meet up in an hour.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, these creative juices are individual, so that makes sense to me. Now, you are somebody who wrote poetry, still writes poetry, mm-hmm. I assume. Now, how is that different from songwriting? Because songwriting was always traditionally rhyming and so on, and so can poetry be, but mm-hmm. what's the difference for you?
I always use Amy Mann as a really great example of a person who I think writes the lyrics as she's writing the music. I mean, I don't know that, but I assume because her phrasing is so in line with the music, so each syllable goes over one note, and then there's a change, and it's this mathematically beautiful way of writing that I totally don't have, because I started playing acoustic guitar and piano just well enough so that I could write on my own, and then now that I write with Suave all the time, I'm not necessarily doing that. But I would just, you know, be sort of strumming along acoustic guitar, the only rhythm pattern that I know, just so I could have some notes to sing over top of. There are certain people who, when they're writing songs, when they're writing the music simultaneously, it distributes the syllables in a different way. Mm. But I think with poetry, it needs to be beautiful on the page. And with music, there's so much more that you can add to your voice to make something what I hope is beautiful, that you can actually peel back some of the layers of complexity with your metaphor, and it can be very simple. Suave is really good at writing very simple choruses. I've always struggled. I'm like way too verbose. I have way too much to say. And
I never think of choruses as simple.
Oh, really?
No.
That's interesting. I feel like the song, well, maybe I'm specifically talking about pop music and rock music, because the stuff, that people can easily sing along with, the people that people gravitate to the quickest, if you think about, some really great choruses out there in those genres, I think they are, they're not simple to write, but they are like maybe just this simple repeated phrase that I wouldn't think to do because I have a poetry background. I'm like, well, it has to be, we have to go deeper, and we have to do these, like, all this imagery and these sprawling lines. And
That is a tendency of poetry.
Mm-hmm.
We have to go deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think my background in poetry certainly helped me to be a better songwriter when I started to write songs. I don't think the two are exactly tethered,
No, they're not. I've talked to many songwriters, Janice mm-hmm. Ian, and they're not. They're just, there's something separate about them, and I understand that. Want to play another excerpt from Talk. This is called Trampoline, and I love this one.
Thank you.
Tell us a bit about it.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody recently who listened to the record, and he said he thought this was the most straight-ahead love song, which I didn't realize that when I was writing it. I don't tend to write love songs. There's just so many of them, and so I don't tend to write that way. But I was thinking about a couple recovering from one of them having gone through a tragic loss. Mm-hmm. And what you might say to extend your support to your partner. Sonically, it was just really fun for me to do all the vocal layering. That's been a total blast with this record that we didn't necessarily get to do on the last one.
So let's listen to Trampoline. Does the arrangements? Is that a collaborative endeavor, or do you have something in mind when you finish?
It is a collaborative endeavor with the band, because I feel like, Suave and I could bring a song that's mostly finished to the table, and he might have ideas for different key parts for keyboard player Zach or bass lines for Chris, but it really takes shape when everybody's in the room. And we've tried to become more economical with our arrangement just because I think that a lot can be accomplished in a really short amount of time. And as a songwriter, you sort of mature. And if you want things on the radio, which we do, they become more radio ready when they're shorter. And so if we can trim out an extra chorus that really isn't doing anything for the song, or shorten an instrumental that isn't necessarily adding, then we'll do that. And a lot of that is done beforehand, but some with the whole band.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Maddie Walsh. She's the lead singer and one of the songwriters for the Blind Spots, which is a wonderful band if you've never heard it.
Thank you.
You tour a lot, mm-hmm. and you're the only woman in the band. Mm-hmm. What's that experience for you? Is it a little overwhelming? Or?
For the most part, it's really, really wonderful because I love the people that I travel with. I love my band so much. And this time we've got a tour manager on the road with us, but also a man. So it'll be me and five guys. And I think for me as a woman, I just need a little bit of extra space. I usually get up a little earlier than everybody, and I'll do yoga and or go for a run just so I can have some quiet time. Because being in the van is a lot of chatter.
Oh, all bad.
Yeah, and it's fun. I mean, it's like, constantly having a bunch of friends around, which can be really great. But sometimes I do need a little more solitude, I guess. And Suave actually does, too. He's may need more than I do. Mm. So we go on some walks, and he just needs to walk around with his guitar and just play, and then he's fine. That's his solitude. If they were people who I didn't love so much, it would make it a lot harder. But I've done a good job of surrounding myself with women supporting men.
Uh-huh.
Including my father, my brother, and my husband, all the men who I feel are very close to me would absolutely call themselves feminists. And so when I have to take the role of manager, at the end of the night to try to get paid or whatever the case may be, I have a lot of support from everybody.
That's wonderful. I know a lot of artists have gotten into politics even more so in the last few years. Well, what about you? Are you going to head into a more political direction? Do you feel yourself wanting to commentate on current events?
Yeah. In short, absolutely. Suave and I, when we first formed the band and things were very different, we had sort of talked about the idea of staying out of politics because we're entertainers. And although, both of us are pretty far left, we talk about politics all the time when we're at home or driving around. But certain bands like the Grateful Dead really never wrote anything overtly political. They talked about larger concepts, human connection and love. And so at first we set out to do that. And then I can't remember. Maybe it was just while Trump was campaigning. I think that it became more of an effort to keep my mouth shut, and I felt like I wasn't necessarily supporting the people who are fans of the band by saying nothing. When I first started expressing my opinions on social media, I got a surge of angry
really?
Emails, and we actually had a show that got canceled. The owner said to me, please, don't bring your politics into my establishment, and this was in a Florida town, and that's not what this place is for, and I want to make sure that you won't be saying anything political on stage. And I said, well, I'm not going to guarantee that, so if you'd like to cancel the show, we can do that. And all these people like sending me nasty messages and deleting me left and right on Facebook and all this stuff. I got this surge in the other direction of gratitude and support from people who are like, thanks for actually saying something. And then newer people, new fans, because we had decided not to be quiet about it anymore. I don't think I was ever silent about my political views, and I think that they've always come out in the songwriting if people are really paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
But anything can be interpreted in any way that people
absolutely.
Choose.
And people are knee-jerk right now. They're ready to take offense at almost anything in this culture right now.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Right. There's a cavernous divide between the two sides right now. And I think a lot of people are trying to bridge that gap and reaching across to talk to people from the other side. I think Sarah Silverman's new show on Hulu, I Love You America, is really fantastic. I don't know if you've seen it, but she's outspokenly left-wing, and she's going into these very Trump-supporting towns and just like having dinner with people and going to softball games and sitting around the firehouse and going to get her hair cut and just talking to people to sort of take the stigma away, because it's what the Democrats have been demonized as being. It's like untouchable. There's nothing we could possibly have in common. And that's this perpetual instilling fear of the other that the whole administration has been pushing.
Yes. We don't want to run out of time. I want to play another excerpt from Talk. This is called Big Red Button. I love this. This is my favorite song.
Awesome.
To tell us a bit.
Well, this one, again, it's like going back to this concept of the light and the dark. I had, after Trump won the election, I have a really wise aunt, my dad's older sister, and she has two daughters, and they were like, Mom, like, what do we do at this point? What do we say to each other? And how do we move forward? And I'll probably butcher her response to them, but she posted it publicly. And it was essentially, perhaps this is the galvanizing event, because we didn't realize that all of these things were going on under the surface, and we became complacent when we thought there was progress for 8 years. And so Big Red Button is, it's about the choice to either be destructive or not, or wondering if there actually is a choice, and the back and forth between giving and taking.
Let's listen to it.
I believe in magic, no tricks held up a sleeve. I can feel electrostatic ticking inside of me, and I could be a cannonball. Whoa, whoa. If I chose to destroy it all.
I really love that song.
Thank you.
It's one of my favorites. It's haunting.
Thank you.
I want to get in one last excerpt from Talk, and this one's the title song,
mm-hmm.
Talk.
Yeah.
To tell us just a little bit about it.
Yeah. So that was the album title that we had decided on before we went to Nashville to record the album, but we didn't have a song for it. We just loved this concept that was like super simple, could be interpreted in a bunch of different ways. And thinking about this idea that it's been very, very hard for people to communicate, especially with people on an opposing political side, not only nationally but globally right now. And so communication has been, we've been failing. And so just listening to others and reaching out to say, even if I don't quite get there with the words that I'm about to pick, just know that I put my best intentions in it.
Uh-huh.
And so the song was written on the second to last day of our time in Nashville, and Nick, the producer, walked in as we were just sort of goofing around on a break, and he listened and he said, "We're tracking this for sure,
wow.
And we'll probably put it on the record." So he plays some electric guitar on it. There's no drums, and it's a really broken down, sweet version of Our Best Intentions.
Let's listen to it.
If I include my best intentions, and when I struggle with the words, would you try to see it how I meant it? Talk to me, tell me all about it. Talk to me, why don't you talk to me? You can start, I'll let you finish. And at the end, if I still seem distant, try again, I swear I'll listen. I admit that I'm long-winded. I get so angry, call it passionate. I see a crack, I wanna fix it. But beauty's in the flaw, don't wanna miss it. Talk to me, tell me all about it.
You know, this really is a fabulous album. I assume you guys...
Thank you.
Finished it and decided that it was too, right?
Yes, we did. I feel more confident about this record than anything we've done.
So really?
I do. Mm-hmm.
To tell us who some of your influences are.
My influences are all over the place. I find Beck to be a fascinating artist because he's put out so many different kinds of records. He's put out, like, overtly really fun pop records, and then he came out with New Morning, which was, like, this really beautiful acoustic, slow, sweeping stuff. And then he came out with another record that was even poppier after that. So I think basically what I admire the most is when an artist has achieved creative freedom, you really get to see their authenticity coming out. Mm-hmm. And if Ryan Adams is another one who I feel like can put out lots of different kinds of records. Neil Young is the same way, you know, so many different, you know, you could just tap into a certain mood and run with it.
Yeah.
So I guess that's, as far as my experimental nature goes, I love artists like that who are constantly changing. But I have a lot of, like, female vocalists who are influences, yeah, too.
One of the pop singers, jazz singer, I don't know what you'd call her, was Grace Slick, that I loved.
Oh, yeah.
She was such a big influence on me when I was younger. And
force, yeah.
And she almost seems to me the epitome of a rock star.
Yes.
Diva.
Absolutely.
Everything you can think of that's positive.
Yes, I agree. She's got it all. I wish that I'd gotten a chance to see her. I have not, but she's right up there. And I mean, other bands and female singers from that era, and obviously Janis Joplin and Etta James and Aretha Franklin, and I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. Yeah. But yeah.
I want to ask you this before we run out of time. What are you hoping people will take from this new CD? Any theme in particular?
I mean, in short, I really hope that our fans who already have been following us and supporting us really enjoy it. And it's been a long time since we've come out with something new. Well, 3 years, almost four. But I hope that this reaches new audiences for us. We've been really pushing hard on the business end of things to get ourselves into a different place. So we're going to be spending a couple of weeks in Nashville just as a sort of residency and setting up a bunch of meetings. And I do believe that these songs are probably the most marketable of anything that we've written so far, you know, a handful of them in particular. So, yeah, I mean, first and foremost, the music, I want it to reach people and to speak to people, but also I want it to get us to maybe a different audience that we don't have yet, and a wider audience, because 10 years is putting in your time.
Oh, yeah, celebrating the 10th anniversary is remarkable to me.
Yeah, I think.
We are almost out of time, Maddie. Can you give us a website so people can get in touch?
Yep, it's theblindspots.com, and we have pre-sales for the record up there now. The new album will be out October 27th.
Yes, at the Hangar Theater. You guys are doing a big show.
Yeah.
Well, Maddie Walsh, thank you so much for joining
us.
It's been a great pleasure to see you again. And really, people, my friends, my listeners, go get this CD. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.